This podcast is part of the Christian Geek Central Network at ChristianGeekCentral.com.
Strangers and Aliens, Episode 98, Old Time Radio, Ray Bradbury's The Martian Chronicles.
Attention, all true believers.
Look, up in the sky.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men?
Want to get away from it all?
Anyone on the air?
Hello? Hello?
Anyone on the air?
Hello?
When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Hello and welcome to Strangers and Aliens, a podcast about sci-fi and Christianity and faith and fantasy and all that. I am Ben Avery. I'm a comic book writer and comic book fan and sci-fi fan. And I am joined by an author, an actor, a pastor, Dr. Jace O'Neill.
Hello, I'm Dr. Jace O'Neill.
Okay. And I'm also joined by Stephen MacDonald, a comic book fan, comic book writer, and
I drive a bus.
Bus driver, yes. Not the bus, not from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., not the bus.
Oh, I wish.
A real bus, but yeah. So, guys, I'm excited about this episode. It's a long one, though, so we have to just kind of do our introduction here and then get out of the way for a giant of science fiction. This is one of our old-time radio episodes where we play an old-time radio show, and then we kind of talk about it. We're not going to talk about this very much. We're going to let it speak for itself. How familiar are you guys with Ray Bradbury?
Pretty familiar.
Dr. Jace?
Not at all.
Oh, really?
Oh, dear.
No, I mean, I know who he is, and I know his titles, but It's been one of those ones where I've been kind of waiting to hear. Actually, I was wanting to ask you guys, is it worth reading, or is it one of those ones that I should wait on? Because I know I waited on Doctor Who until you guys said you have to get into the new Doctor Who. And so I've done that. I've seen every Doctor Who episode. Is this worth reading? Because I was looking at the leather-bound editions at Barnes & Noble, and I was really tempted to get it because I just never got into it.
Yeah.
Is it worth it?
Well, let me – yeah. Ray Bradbury as an author, he is one of the giants for a reason. I mean, he
yes.
– I call him the master – of the melancholy macabre. He writes stories that kind of really dig into that that zenzut, or however you pronounce that, but that deep longing that you have for your youth, that deep longing that you have for lost times and lost childhoods. But then he also writes things that kind of get into the fantasy of living, you know, getting old. And you know, sometimes what he writes is just joyful, but it's a melancholy joy. And sometimes the things that he writes are horrific, but at the same time, it's kind of a melancholy horror. And, The Martian Chronicles, which is what we're talking about today, is one of his masterpieces. As long as you kind of take it as a science fiction fantasy, at the time that he wrote it, space travel wasn't happening. And so It definitely is of a time period. I mean, we're talking in the 50s that he was writing this. And he was writing about around the year 2000 where we go to Mars. We colonize Mars. We come back. There's nuclear war and all that kind of thing. And on the other hand, you have like The Illustrated Man is another one of those books that's in that Barnes & Noble edition. That book, Dr. Jace, that Barnes & Noble edition, those would probably be the top three Ray Bradbury books that I would recommend anyone read if you're going to read Ray Bradbury.
Because I'm very selective in my reading because, as you guys know, I don't have a lot of time with the baby on the way.
Ah, yes.
So for me, I have to pick my books very carefully, and fiction has been really tough. So I've been reading a lot of short stories.
Well, that is exactly what you're getting with that book. The Martian Chronicles, Ray Bradbury called The Martian Chronicles a collection of short stories pretending to be a novel. That's his own words. The Illustrated Man has a framework. It's about a guy who has tattoos all over his body. And when you look at the tattoos, they come to life and present a story. And so it's a collection of his short stories. And so with Martian Chronicles, it's all of his short stories that he had written at the time about Mars. And it kind of is a history of the colonization of Mars, but they're these short stories. And with Illustrated Man, the same thing. And I think the third book in that Barnes & Noble edition is Apples of the Golden Sun, which is another collection of his short stories. And okay. So,
well, now I'm sold because I've been, you know, I have a lot of those and I've been working through them. I bought the Jules Verne's and I fell asleep on page 4. And so I decided not to pursue that one for a little while.
Watch the movie. You know, in the Martian Chronicles, there's some stories that are as short as 2 pages. Yeah. Because they're kind of an interstitial thing, kind of taking you, bridging the gap between one time and another, like one story and another. And there are characters in the Martian Chronicles, in the novel itself, who they show up in one story and then they'll show up in another one, or they'll mention something that happened earlier. But yeah, it's basically a collection of short stories. It's going to fit your reading style anyway, whether or not it fits your preferences for content. I'll throw this out there for you, Dr. Jace. If you buy that book, all right, and you start reading it and you don't like it, I will buy it from you. Because I've been considering buying it, but I already have both The Illustrated Man and The Martian Chronicles in these dingy, beat-up paperback versions. So,
okay.
All right.
That's a deal.
So that, yeah, you it's a no-lose situation. You're only losing a little bit of time, but that time is being spent discovering what it is about Ray Bradbury that
people like. And then I can send it to you whenever I send you back Babylon 5.
Yeah, so what, 2020 are we talking?
Yeah, probably when we stop having kids. You know, that's what we're looking at. No.
So, okay, so briefly I'm going to introduce then what this episode is. This episode is essentially an old-time radio book. It's an audio book of the Martian Chronicles, but it's using public domain old-time radio episodes and piecing them together in chronological order based on the order of these stories in the book. So what you're getting here is you're actually getting various stories of various lengths from the old series X-1, from the old series Dimension X, from the old series Escape. And if you listen to what we're presenting here today, you will get a nice, good overview of the Martian Chronicles. It's the abridged version, but it's been abridged by people who were not making it as a singular storyline. It's people who take this one story and turn it into its own thing. So some of these stories are not exactly what happens in the book, which is kind of nice because if you like what you're hearing, I am going to suggest you go and buy the book like I just told Dr. Jace to do. I am not giving our listeners the same deal I gave to Dr. Jace because I do not want 15 copies of a $20 book that I had to buy back from people. But if you are interested in what you hear, go to StrangersandAliens.com/Ray Bradbury, and you'll find links to where you can order things from Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And if you use those links to buy those books, you are actually going to be helping out Strangers and Aliens cover some of our operating costs. And the other thing you're helping out with by doing so is you're helping, you know, Dr. Jace with his new child that's coming in.
Yeah, appeal through the emotions there.
So the other thing you can do, though, is even if you go to StrangersandAliens.com/Ray Bradbury, click on those Amazon links and order something else. It doesn't change the price for you, but it actually gives us a small percentage. So I'm just saying, you know, that's just the way it works. So
something.
Dollar
bill, y'all.
I think we've talked a little bit longer than I anticipated. So I think we need to get again to the meat of this episode. Are you guys ready, gentlemen?
Meat.
No, you're hungry. Is that right, Steve?
A little bit, yeah.
All right. So without any further ado, here is Ray Bradbury's The Martian Chronicles as adapted by science fiction radio writers in the 1950s. Ray Bradbury's The Martian Chronicles was adapted into an episode of Dimension X. Because Dimension X was a half-hour series, it was greatly abridged. In Ray Bradbury's novel, every story was titled with a date, and then the title. The first story in both the novel and the adaptation, January 1999, Rocket Summer.
January in the year 1999. 1 minute it was Ohio winter with doors closed, the panes blind with frost, icicles fringing every roof, children skiing on snowy slopes. And then a long wave of warmth crossed the small town, a flooding sea of hot air.
Bye, Mom, I'm going out.
William McClellan, you come back here. You know you can't go out in winter without a coat. You want to catch your death of cold?
But it isn't cold. It's warm outside. It's Rocket Summer.
Rocket Summer?
You know, like Indian Summer.
The rocket lay on the launching field, blowing out pink clouds of fire and heat, cracking the icicles, melting the snow, making summer with every breath of its mighty exhausts. It seared the faces of the watching crowd and drove them back. And then they saw the red fire and heard the big sound as the silver rocket shot up toward Mars and left them behind on an ordinary Monday morning on the ordinary planet Earth.
The next story in the Dimension X adaptation, Ila, also known as I'll Not Ask for Wine, February 1999. Ila.
They lived in a house of crystal pillars on the planet Mars by the edge of an empty sea. And every morning you could see Ila eating the golden fruits that grew from the crystal walls, or her husband sitting alone in his room reading from a singing metal book over which he brushed his hand as one might play a harp. Ila and her husband were not old. Once they had liked painting pictures with chemical fire, swimming in the canals when the wine trees filled them with green liquors, and talking into the dawn together. But no more. Marriage sometimes makes people old and familiar while still young. And Ila was not happy now. This morning she sat dreaming between the crystal pillars and wished that somehow a miracle might happen. And then suddenly...
Ila, did you call?
No.
I thought I heard you cry out.
Did I? I was almost asleep and had a dream.
In the daytime? You don't often do that.
Strange. How very strange. I dreamed about a man. A tall man. 6 feet tall.
Oh, how absurd. He'd be a giant, a misshapen giant.
I know. And yet, somehow he looked quite handsome. He was dressed in a strange uniform. And he came down out of the sky in a long silver craft.
Out of the sky? What nonsense.
And he spoke pleasantly to me in another language. But somehow I understood him with my mind. Telepathy, I suppose.
A really ill...
And he said... I've come from the third planet in my ship. My name is Nathaniel York.
A stupid name. Whoever heard of a name like that?
Perhaps they have names like that on Earth.
That's ridiculous, Ila. Everyone knows the third planet is incapable of supporting life. There's too much oxygen in their atmosphere.
I suppose. But haven't you ever wondered if... Well, wouldn't it be fascinating if there were people there and they traveled through space in some sort of ship?
Really, Ila... You know, I hate this emotional wailing. Now let's get on with our work.
Evening came. The twin white moons of Mars were rising, and the house closed itself in like a giant flower. A wind blew among the pillars, stirring Ila's russet hair, crooning softly in her ear. And it was then that she began singing the song.
Drink to me, O me, thine eyes, and I will pledge.
with mine.
Hila, what's that song?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? I've never heard it before. Did you compose it?
No. Yes. No, I don't know, really. I don't even know what the words are. They're in another language. It was part of a dream I had, I guess.
Oh. You know, you haven't been yourself lately. It might do you good if we went away to the Blue Mountains for a week or so.
What?
Did you hear what I said?
I'm sorry. I was watching the sky.
You're certainly interested in the sky tonight.
It's very beautiful.
Well, what about my suggestion? Shall we leave for the Blue Mountains in the morning?
You mean go away now? Oh, no.
No? Why not? Why don't you want to go?
I don't know. I just don't want to, that's all. Oh, leave a kiss in the cup and not ask
who. Hila, I'm sick of that silly song. It's late. Let us sleep.
From the crystal walls poured a soft carpeting of mist to support Hila where she lay down to sleep. But through the night she tossed restlessly until just at dawn the dream recurred.
Hila! Hila, wake up!
What? Oh, what is it?
You've been dreaming again. You talked in your sleep.
Did I?
Yes. What were you dreaming?
Oh, the ship. It came from the sky again. And the tall man stepped out and talked with me. Telling me little jokes and laughing.
What else happened?
And then this Captain York... Oh, I can't. It's all so silly.
Tell me!
He said I was beautiful. And then he kissed me.
I thought so. What else?
Why, Eel, you're so bad-tempered. It's only a dream.
Is it? You know I can read your mind. You can't keep secrets from me.
Well, all that happened was this Captain York told me... Well, he told me he'd take me away in his ship, into the sky. Take me back to his planet with him. It's quite ridiculous, really.
Ridiculous, is it? You should have heard yourself. Fawning on him, talking to him, singing with him all night. In your dream, he landed in Green Valley, didn't he?
Please.
And he told you he was coming today.
Yes. But what's come over you? It was only a dream. You can't be jealous of that.
No. No, I suppose not. Forgive me. I'm being childish.
Eel, you're sick. You've been working too hard.
No, I'm all right. But perhaps you're right. Maybe I could use a little relaxation.
Yes.
I think I'll take the morning off and go hunting.
Hunting?
Yes, in Green Valley.
Numbly, she watched him go to a closet and draw forth an evil-looking weapon. And then her husband was gone, walking toward Green Valley. And Hila waited, watching the sky for an unknown thing, trembling with a nameless fear. And then it happened. A whirring, rushing sound. The warmth as of a giant fire passing in the air. The gleam of metal in the sky.
He's come. It's true. The dream is true.
The rocket vanished over the hill. The sky was empty again. And trembling, Hila waited again, looking toward Green Valley and seeing nothing. Listening for sounds and hearing nothing. Until... A shot sounded. Very sharply, the sound of the evil weapon.
Oh, no. No.
Her body jerked with the sound, and she wanted to scream and never stop screaming. For now she knew the dream could never come true. And there was nothing left but the song, the strange and fine and beautiful song.
Drink to me only with thine eyes, and I will pledge with mine, or leave a kiss within the cup.
Thank you.
Because of the length of Dimension X, not every story could fit into their adaptation. But this story, telling the story of the second expedition to Mars, was adapted by the radio series Escape. August 1999, The Earthmen.
Communication number one. Mission accomplished.
Yes, sir.
You better make sure you pause after that. Give them a few seconds to get over their excitement down there.
They'll go crazy. Be bigger than New Year's Eve.
New Year's Eve be bigger than the Armistice. Only one celebration will top it in our lifetime.
What's that, sir?
The one they throw when we get back.
All right, now, where was I?
Mission accomplished.
Yeah.
First rocket expedition to Mars landed upon Mars 1203 Earth time. Estimated position of landing, approximately longitude 345 degrees, latitude minus 7 degrees. Landed without incident at edge of forest. Atmosphere, what's a good word to say it's all right for breathing?
Optimal?
Yeah. Found atmosphere optimal. Descended from rock.
Captain, would you?
Yeah?
Prescott, sir. I see Prescott. He's running this way.
Running? Something after him?
No, he's just loping along. I think he's smiling.
Keep your binoculars on him. Sound off. It looks like he's in trouble. Descended from rocket. Sent Lieutenant Prescott on reconnaissance mission. Dugan, Prescott, all right?
Yes, sir. Want me to yell to him?
No, just stay up there and watch him. Morale high. Commend efficiency and discipline of the entire crew. Lieutenant Prescott and Dugan, Sergeant Clitheroe.
Thanks, Captain.
There's enough glory for all, Sergeant. Any chance of sending that in now?
Not for 2 hours. Channels won't be clear for voice communication until 3 o'clock Earth time.
They don't even know yet that we made it. I'd like to be down there when they get that message. Gee, what excitement. Sirens, bands playing, artillery salute.
Here's Prescott, sir.
Good. Come on down, Dugan. Prescott, you all right?
People.
Here, sit down, sit down. Catch your breath.
People. Mars has people.
All right, now take your time. You want to drink?
Mars is inhabited. People, just like home.
Any women?
Let him talk. What sort of people?
Ordinary-looking people. Men, women, kids.
Hostiles?
I don't think so. I came down a road, a country road, followed it to the right angle into a paved highway.
Yeah.
Before I could decide whether to go right or left, I heard a buzzing sort of sound. I ducked behind a bush. Vehicle rolled past. One wheel must have a gyroscopic balance of some sort.
Yeah.
Inside was a man and a woman.
What'd they look like?
Just like us. Hair, eyes, nose, mouth, body, clothes.
Mars inhabited. Wait till I hear that down there.
As it passed, I followed it. I came to a hill, and when I got to the top, there it was, a little town. Buildings, streets, just like home. And then I hurried back here.
People. And just like home, huh?
Yeah.
You suppose they're really friendly?
Well, I don't see why not.
You heard what he said? Civilization up here resembles the one down there. What would they do on Earth if Martians came down and established contact?
You'd make a pretty big thing out of it.
Yeah, the people up here will probably treat us the same way. Even so, we're not going to take any chances. We'll be on.
We're going into town?
Right. As soon as we camouflage the rocket. All right, start cutting some of those branches and gathering leaves. Cover it up good. I don't want anybody monkeying around while we're gone.
Right.
We can't be gone long, Captain. Channel's open at 3.
We'll be back by then, if everything goes well. Oh, can you imagine their reaction when they see us? Come on, man, make it fast! All right, men, dress it up. I'm going to knock on the door now and keep smiling to show we're friendly and let me do all the talking. Understand?
Yes, sir. Yes, what do you want?
You speak English.
I speak what I speak. What do you want?
Martian speaks English. We're from Earth. I'm Captain Williams, commander of the first expedition to Mars. And you are the first Martian we've met.
Martian?
What I mean to say is you live on the fourth planet from the sun, correct?
Well, everybody knows that.
Well, we're from Earth.
Where?
It's never been done before.
What has it?
How is it you speak such good English?
I'm not speaking, I'm thinking. Telepathy. Now, what is it you want?
We're from Earth. From Earth.
Some other time, Mac. I got my own problem.
How do you like that?
He doesn't look very bright.
I know, but...
Well,
try it again. Knock on the door.
I'm in command here, Dugan. I'll do all the thinking.
Yes, sir. I'll knock on the door and try it again.
Yeah?
Oh, excuse me, ma'am. Was that your husband I was just talking to?
Yes.
He shut the door so quick, I never got a chance to explain.
Oh, I'm sorry, but he is busy. Can I help you? Are you strangers in town?
I'll say we are. We're from Earth.
Earth?
The planet Earth. Maybe you have a different name for it. The third in order from the sun. We came in a rocket. Almost 60 million miles through
space. Don't come near me.
I just want to see you can. You and your husband are the first people on this planet we've
seen. Don't come near me!
You don't understand. We're from Earth. We came in a rocket. We came in a rocket.
Ah!
We...
Ah! 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 Ah!
What did I do?
Captain, don't you think we'd better get away from here, maybe?
Well, all I did was... How far is it to town, Prescott?
Quarter of a mile.
I just wanted to shake hands. What was it that scared it? Button your buttons, do whatever you want. Doesn't seem to make any difference. Nobody's paying any attention to us anyhow. You'd think these people had visitors from Earth every day. Nobody even turns around to look at us.
Can I say something, Captain?
Yeah?
We can't blame them for ignoring us, sir. We look just the same as they do. For all they know, we're just a few Martians ambling through the town square. We ought to take a chance and try telling someone else.
We've told three of them already. Back at that farmhouse, the man ignored us and the woman screamed and ran away. And that girl we told fainted.
Captain, looks like a bar or a soda fountain in here. Would it be all right if we went in and had something to drink?
Yeah, why not?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Could we get something to drink here?
Got some nice fruit, Crystal. It's all right. The same for everyone.
Sorry,
Tom. I don't think I've ever seen you fellows around. You're strangers?
We're from Earth.
Where?
Earth. Third planet from the sun.
Oh. Clumsy of me. Earth, huh? Well, what do you know?
You mean you understand what I'm trying to tell you?
Sure. Sure.
That we're the first men from Earth ever to reach Mars, that it's never been done before?
That we came 60 million miles in a rocket?
Sure. 60 million, huh? Rocket, you say? Well, I'm proud to make your acquaintance.
I'm Captain Williams. This is Lieutenant Prescott, Sergeant Clitheroe, and Lieutenant Duke.
I'm honored. I'm honored. Do you mind if I bring my son in to meet you? This is an occasion.
Sure. Bring him in.
Son, come in here. Rocket, eh? All the way by rocket. Say now.
You understand what we went through, the chances we took.
Sure. Why, you're real heroes. Let me shake hands again.
Will you call me that?
Son, these men are from Earth. From Earth. Understand?
Yes, Pop.
We're the first men from Earth ever to reach Mars.
Isn't that wonderful, son? Think of it.
It's wonderful.
Go tell everyone. You don't mind if he tells people, do you?
Mine. I should say not.
I would like him to.
As many as possible.
Go ahead, son. Hurry. think of it, all the way from Earth.
There were times in there when I didn't think we'd make it, I can tell you.
Hey, I'll bet there were.
Turbine conked out when we hit the stratosphere, and I began to sweat the big drop.
Yeah, I can imagine. Turbine, it's pretty serious.
But even before we left, we were told we only had about one chance in three of making
it. Hey, I don't see where you found the courage.
We didn't even know what we'd find when we got here.
My,
you
oh
see,
my.
It's never been done before. Never.
Let me shake your hand again.
Lots of men were killed trying, but they never succeeded.
What an honor for our little town.
You're the first to know, really. The very first.
Oh?
Your name will go down in history in all the school books with ours.
And the monuments on both planets.
Hey, what is your name? Hey, wait a minute, man. Hold on.
What's up, Skipper?
Outside. All those people. Looks like the whole town.
Right. They must have heard the news. The glorious news from my son. Yes, they've come to welcome you.
Hey, hold your fire, men. Welcome. It doesn't sound like they've come to welcome us.
Hello.
What? That's the man we first spoke to, the one whose wife got scared.
Gentlemen, please don't shoot. There must be some mistake. I'll just ask them why they're behaving in such a...
Here, come back here. Come back here, you old... Come back here. What do you make of that?
Doctor, I don't understand this and I don't like it.
Do the back way out. See if it's clear. Let's got you fire when I say fire, not before. Lower your gun. They're all around us, Captain. You make a break for it.
One volley at my command.
Captain Williams.
Yeah?
Look, there's a little guy out there giving them all what for. They're starting to disperse. Let me see.
Immediately,
I say. Go on now. Go on, all of you. Go on
home. He's coming in. Now, I'll do all the talking. Put your guns away, but stay on your toes. Dugan, let's keep our eye on the back, huh?
Gentlemen, may I apologize for the unforgivable actions of my fellow townspeople. They've acted barbarously. Barbarously.
We didn't do a thing. We were as friendly as we could be.
Well, they're ignorant. Ignorant. Just ignorant. No reverence for science. None whatever.
We're from Earth. Did they tell you?
Oh, yes, yes. A great honor, sir. This is without a doubt the most memorable moment of my life. As a man of science, I greet you.
What have we done to make them so hostile?
Well, please, put it out of your thoughts. They are dolts, idiots. Simply because two women were stupid enough to be frightened. My apologies, my sincere apologies. Believe me, sir, I would never have forgiven them if they had harmed so much as a hair of your head. A scientific marvel, and they would do you harm. Unforgivable. But we're wasting time. The members of the Institute are waiting.
Institute?
The Institute of Science. We have sole jurisdiction in such matters. The members have already been informed and are eagerly awaiting your appearance. It would cause a sensation.
Well, that's a little more like it.
This way, if you please. I have transportation waiting. And have no fear of these rustics. You're in my care now.
I'm Captain Williams, sir. Who are you?
I'm president of the Institute. My name is Dr. Blue. This way, gentlemen. This way. In here, Captain Williams. Go right in, please.
I won't make a speech, you understand. Just a few informal remarks.
Well, the members of the Institute will listen to you with the greatest interest, no matter how informal your remarks. Go right in and make yourself at home.
Thank you, Doctor. I'll keep it short. We have to be back at our rocket by 3 o'clock our time in order to...
To communicate with Earth. Yes, you've told me. Yes. Go right in. I'll join you very soon.
Thank you. After you, men.
Mm-hmm. He's a nice fellow.
Wow. What an auditorium.
Hey. Must be hundreds of people. I wonder how they managed to get them together at such short notice.
Straighten up, men. They're looking at us. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I am Mr. Earl.
And I'm Captain Jonathan Williams of New York City. On Earth. Thank you, one and all, on behalf of myself and my crew. Thank you.
Well, it's good to see another man from Earth. I am from Earth also.
How was that again?
There are many of us here from Earth.
You? From Earth?
Yes.
But is that possible? Did you come by rocket? Has space travel been going on for centuries? What country are you from?
Tuirio. I came by the spirit of my body years ago.
Tuirio? I never heard of it. What was that about the spirit of your body?
What do you mean there are many of us here from Earth?
Not only from Earth. He's from Jupiter. He's from Saturn.
Jupiter? Saturn? Wait a minute, this is confusing. Where on Earth is this Tuirio?
Tuirio?
Is it near America?
America? What is America?
You never heard of America?
No.
You say you're from Earth and you never heard of America.
Earth is a place of seas and nothing but seas. There is no land. I am from Earth and I know.
Earth is a place of all jungle. I am from Orion Earth, a civilization built of silver.
Silver? Men, come over here a second. Do you realize what this is?
What, sir?
This is no celebration. These aren't members of the Institute. This isn't a banquet or a surprise party.
Huh?
Look at their eyes. Listen to them. Now I understand why the woman screamed, why the girl fainted, why the old boy in the soda fountain ran out on us, why the crowd was hostile, why they bought us here.
Oh, where are we, sir?
In an insane asylum. They think we're crazy.
Clitheroe, try the door again.
I just tried it, Captain. It's still locked. Go right in, gentlemen. The members of the Institute will listen to you with the greatest interest, no matter how informal your remarks. I'll bet they've been listening, all right. I'll bet they've had us under observation ever since we entered this building. Captain, look.
What?
You ought to take a look. That woman who said she was from Earth, too. A blue flame is coming out of her mouth and then turning into the shape of a small naked child.
You think that's something? I've been watching one of them change into a crystal pillar and then into a golden statue and then into a staff of cedar and then back into a woman again. Never saw anything like that. Magician?
No. Not magicians. Those are hallucinations. They pass their insanity over into us and we see their hallucinations too. Telepathy, auto-suggestion, and telepathy.
Well, look, Captain.
If hallucinations can appear this real to us, to anyone, if hallucinations are catching and almost believable. It's no wonder they took us for psychotics. If that woman can produce little blue fire children and that one can change into a pillar, how natural if normal Martians think we can produce our rocket ship with our minds.
I've been thinking along those lines, too. If someone came up to you on Earth and said he was from Mars, just came in by rocket, wouldn't you think he was crazy?
I would. Heaven help me, I would. What time is it?
2:35. Those channels open in 25 minutes.
Where's that doctor?
Where's that doctor? I said, where's that doctor?
I'm here, Captain.
I demand our release. I demand an apology for this outrage. My government will certainly hear of this. All the governments of Earth will hear of it. I shall tell them of the indignities heaped upon their representatives.
Yes, yes, of course.
Don't humor me! Are you going to release us, or must I take steps?
What sort of steps?
I'll kill you.
That's very interesting. Excuse me a moment. Dr. Hall?
Yes, doctor. Did you call me, doctor?
The case is developing along classic lines. I thought you might be interested. He's just threatened to kill me. Proceed, please, Captain.
I wasn't joking, I tell you. Are you going to stand aside?
No.
All right. Jan.
Most interesting. What do you suppose the next phase will be?
A denial of insanity. Reaffirmation of sanity.
But we are sane. We are.
You see? Classic.
Men try to think of something. He thinks we're insane and he won't understand that we're not.
No. Not at all. I do not think all of you are insane. Oh, no. Just you, sir. The others, the ones you persist in referring to as your crew, they do not exist. They are secondary hallucinations.
Secondary?
Hallucinations.
But you can touch them. You can hear them. Go ahead and touch them.
They would prove nothing. The patients have come to me with snakes crawling from their ears. When I cured them, the snakes vanished.
We'll be glad to be cured. Go ahead.
It's unusual. Not many want to be cured. The cure is drastic, you know.
Cure ahead. I'm confident you'll find we're all sane.
He persists in referring to the others.
Oh, they never stop. You know, Captain, such cases as yours need special treatment. The others in this hall are simpler forms, but once a patient has deteriorated as much as you have with primary, secondary, tertiary, auditory, olfactory, and lingual delusions, as well as tactile and optical fantasies, it's a pretty bad business. We may have to resort to euthanasia.
Euthanasia? You're crazy! Now, listen. My crew and I left Earth 3 days ago in a rocket. We landed here in Mars.
Yes, yes, you've already told me, Captain. Most detailed dream fantasy I've ever heard.
But I can show you the rocket ship.
I'd like to see it. Can you manifest it in this hall?
No, certainly. It's over there on the corner.
I don't see.
Of course you don't. It's not there.
Why did you tell me to look if the rocket isn't there?
I was joking, you idiot. Joking.
Really? You have an odd sense of humor.
If you give us transportation and come with us, I can show you the rocket. It's in a small forest near that town where we first saw you.
Be rather interesting to observe his reaction at the failure to show it to us.
Yes. Would you care to accompany me, Dr. O?
Oh, I'd be delighted.
Very well, Captain. Lead us to your rocket.
Here it is. Here's the rocket. Now are you satisfied? Now are you convinced?
I see nothing resembling a rocket.
Lugan, Prescott, Clitheroe, sure. Clear away the camouflage. Yes. Hurry! Oh, you'll see, Doctor. You'll see. All right, there. There. Okay, men, that's enough. There you are, Doctor. That's the main hatch. Now, are you convinced?
Wonderful manifestation. Wonderful. But like the manifestation of your gun when you threatened to kill me, they're completely unreal and non-functional.
See, I've been thinking about why your gun jammed, Captain. I think it's a change in atmosphere.
I suppose he allows his hallucinatory companion to offer the rational because the reality is too painful for him to offer it himself.
It's precisely, Doctor.
It's a rocket. It's a real rocket. See? I can touch it.
May we look inside?
I insist that you look inside.
Come along, Dr. Lowe. This is one of the most...
Captain, it's 3 minutes to three. If we can keep him here until they open the channels, they'll be able to hear the reaction to our report on Earth, and then we'll be able to...
I know. What a suspicious bunch of louts.
2 cents, I'd tell the people back home not to bother with Mars.
I've never seen anything like it.
No, and now do you believe?
Why, this is the most incredible example of sensual hallucination and hypnotic suggestion I've ever encountered. We went through your rocket, as you call it. I tapped it and I heard it. Auditory fantasy. I smelled it. Olfactory hallucination induced by sensual telepathy. I could even taste it. Lingual fantasy. Allow me to shake your hand, sir, and congratulate you. You are a psychotic genius. You have done the most complete job by the task of projecting your psychotic image life into the mind of another via telepathy and keeping the hallucinations from becoming sensually weaker is almost impossible. Those people in the house usually concentrate on visuals or, at the most, visual and auditory fantasies combined.
But you, Captain, have balanced the whole conglomeration. Your insanity is beautifully complete.
My insanity?
Yes, yes. What a lovely insanity.
Metal, rubber, foods, clothing, fuel, nuts, bolts, 10,000 separate items we've checked on your vessels. Never have we seen such complexity.
Why, there were even shadows under the bunks.
and under everything.
Such a concentration of will. Let me embrace you, sir. I'll write this into my greatest monograph. I'll speak of it at the Martian Institute next month.
Doctor, he's incurable, of course.
Of course. You poor, wonderful man. You'll be much happier, Dave.
What?
Have you any last words?
Wait, no, no, don't you.
Oh, you poor, sad creature. I'm afraid you are far beyond any psychiatric therapy. You're an incurable case.
No.
I shall put you out of this misery which has driven you to imagine this rocket and these three men.
I did not.
It will be most engrossing to watch your three friends and your rocket vanish once I've killed you.
Doctor.
And then I will write a paper on the dissolution of neurotic images from what I observed yesterday.
I'm from Earth. My name is Jonathan Williams, and these
yes,
men are...
Yes. I know.
From Earth. Honest. Captain. Captain Williams.
They continue to exist.
Superb. Hallucinations with time and spatial existence. I wonder how they will react to a bullet.
Oh, no.
Put on that gun.
No, don't.
An auditory appeal, no. Even with the patient dead.
Run! Run!
They still exist. And so does the rocket.
Phenomenal. Such persistence of the psychosis. First time I've ever observed it post-mortem. But it will fade. It will all fade. Interesting, wasn't it? Well, shall we be returning to the Institute?
I should like you to explain certain aspects of the case to the members of my department.
Oh, gladly, my boy, gladly. You see, this patient...
Expedition to Mars is probably better known by the title X-1 used when they did their adaptation, Mars is Heaven. But in the Martian Chronicles, it was simply titled April 2000, The Third Expedition.
Now hear this, now hear this. Approaching critical deceleration. Fasten gravity suits. Stand by to land.
There it is. We've intersected the course vector, sir.
All right, Mr. Lustig. Over to manual control.
Aye, sir.
Masters, sound general quarters.
Aye, sir.
Mr. Lustig, what do you make of the terrain?
There seems to be a heavy ground, Miss Captain. We won't be able to use the infrared lights.
And we'll have to come in on radar.
Isn't that a little risky, sir? Landing in the dark?
I'd rather run the danger of a blind landing, Lieutenant, than come in without the cover of darkness. Remember, we don't know what kind of reception is waiting for us down there.
Airspeed 500. Altitude now 4,000.
Bridge to engine room. Stand by for deceleration. Fire forward tubes 1 and 3. Steady as she goes, Mr. Lustig.
As she goes, sir. Airspeed 100. Altitude 1,000.
Radar indicates a level stretch dead ahead, sir. Skids down.
Skids checked. Altitude 500. 4. 350. 3.
Up a point now. All right. Let's set her down.
Thank you.
Masters, quiet battle stations.
Aye, sir.
All secured, sir. Well, gentlemen. Gentlemen, we're now on Mars, April 20th, 1987, 4:33 Greenwich time. Enter that in the log, Masters.
Aye, sir.
Well, gentlemen, it's less than 2 hours till dawn. As soon as it's light, we'll send out a landing party. Masters, get me an all-over hookup.
We're all set, Captain.
Now hear this. All right, men. The smoking lamp is lit. Well, we're on Mars. The first man shipped from Earth to land here. We don't know what we're going to find or what dangers we may face. We're 17 men on an alien world. And it's up to us whether we ever get home again. The next few hours should tell the story. And I want instant obedience to all commands. I'll court-martial the first man who doesn't jump to when he's ordered. And one other thing. We may be on Mars, but this is still a United States naval vessel. Officers will conduct a personal and weapons inspection in 1 hour. That's all.
An inspection, Captain? Now?
Mr. Lustig, we've got an hour and a half to sweat out before we find out what's outside that airlock. I'd rather have a man worried about his stripes about what's waiting outside on Mars.
Now hear this. Landing party report to forward airlock. Captain Black, Lieutenant Hingston, Lieutenant Lustig, and Dr. Horst report immediately to forward airlock. It's now landing time, minus five.
Well, they're paging us. You ready, Dr. Horst?
Yes, Mr. Lustig. As ready as I will ever be.
Come on, let's get in the lock. Hingston, Lustig, and Horst reporting in the airlock.
Very well, sir. The captain will join you.
4 minutes to go. At least the captain would get here.
What difference does it make?
I just want to get it over with, that's all. Anybody got a cigarette?
Yeah, I think you're smoking too much, Lieutenant Lustig. Are you nervous?
I offer you, Horst.
Wondering what's hidden outside underneath that ground mist? I've been giving it some thought. It'll be very interesting to find out. A very unusual planet, Mars.
Why?
It has an atmosphere. A wonderful thing, an atmosphere. Where you find one, you find life.
You mean Martians? What do you think they'll look like?
Who knows? Intelligent life can take many forms.
You mean they may have green skins and eyes on stalks or something?
The comic book conception is possible, of course. Or they may have developed far beyond us. Perhaps they have a science that can produce weapons far more dangerous than our atomic missiles.
You think we may have to fight our way up?
After all, we are invaders.
Landing time minus two.
All right. We heard this. Know what I'd like to find outside that airlock? Good old Illinois. Ever been there, Lustig?
Only Chicago.
Well, you ought to see my hometown. Green lawns, big white houses.
Sounds like my hometown.
My grandmother used to have one of those iron deer on the lawn. Every Halloween, we'd paint another color. One time, we painted it black and white like a Holstein cow.
Where does your family live, Dr. Horst?
I have no family. When I was a child, they were gassed to death in the Dachau concentration camp.
Tough.
No, it has its advantages. I have no ties on Earth. Nothing to lose now. I imagine I'm the only one on board who is free to enjoy our present peculiar position.
All right, Masters, you can button it up now.
Aye, sir.
Well, gentlemen, check your sidearms. In 1 minute, we'll be the first men to set foot on Mars. Quite an honor, eh?
As long as the medals are not awarded posthumously.
Still uneasy, Dr. Horst?
Captain Black, I've been uneasy ever since I can remember. On Earth and on Mars.
Well, 30 seconds. Give me the intercom phone, Lustig.
Yes, sir.
Masters?
Aye, sir.
Battle stations are to be manned till we return. If we're not back in 2 hours, I want no rescue party sent out. Blast off and save the ship, you understand?
Aye, sir.
All right, 5 seconds.
Four, three, two, one.
Lustig, open the outer airlock.
Aye, sir. Fresh air.
Let's go. All right, now, take it easy. It's too dark to move fast.
Quiet, isn't it? Not even a wind. Can't see anything from this ground, mister.
Quiet. We don't know what's out here. All right, come on.
What the
quiet? Captain, I could swear that sounds like a rooster.
I don't hear it anymore.
Very homely but unlikely sound. A rooster crowing on Mars?
Hingston.
Aye, sir.
Set that machine gun 25 yards to the flank. We'll stay here till the ground mist lifts.
Aye, sir.
What do you make of the ground, Horse?
Grass. Plain grass. You can see some large foliage there where the mist's thinned out.
What the... Hingston, hold your fire, you fool!
I hit it, Captain.
What?
Some kind of wild animal. I hit it. I could see the tracers, but it's still standing.
Come on, Horst. Doctor, where are you?
Up ahead, admiring the wild animal.
Careful, Horst. Wait for us.
Don't worry, Captain. It's an iron deer. A lawn ornament.
Well, that's impossible.
It's hollow. Interesting, isn't it? A whitewashed Victorian iron deer sitting on a lawn in the middle of Mars.
I don't understand.
Look around. The mist's lifting.
Hey, Captain, look there. It's a house, a regular old-fashioned house.
But, sir, on Mars...
Good Lord. I haven't seen carved scrolls and gingerbread like that in years. Look at that port swing. The geraniums.
There. I told you it was a rooster, Captain.
Give me the glasses, Lustig. I want to take a look through that front window. Well, there's an upright piano. Some sheet music on it. Lustig, it's beautiful Ohio.
Oh, it can't be, sir.
Horst, do you think that civilization of two planets could be identical?
I don't know. That specific variety of geraniums is only 50 years old on Earth.
Is it logical that they should develop in Mars? How about that port swing and the piano and beautiful Ohio? Why, it's impossible.
Captain Black, this looks like the town I was born in.
Well, it looks like my hometown, too.
I thought of something, sir. It's the only solution. Maybe we're not the first ship to reach Mars from Earth.
Don't be ridiculous, Lustig.
Oh, how else can you explain it? Suppose some scientists got together. They invented some spaceship and planted a colony here. That's the only answer.
That's impossible, Lustig. Been space travel, it couldn't be secret. Do you have any idea what ships cost, what industrial power is needed? No, there's got to be some logical reason.
I think perhaps we might find out, Captain. The light just went on in that house.
Kingston, cover that door with the machine gun.
Aye, sir.
All right, come on, Horst. We're going to ring that doorbell. There's got to be a scientific answer to all this.
And there's something moving in there.
Stand back, Horst. Give me a clear shot.
Are you sure a bullet can stop a Martian?
Steady now.
Can I help you? If you're selling anything, it's much too early.
No, wait just a minute. What town is this?
What do you mean? Are you census takers?
No. We're strangers here. We want to know how this town got here.
Is this a game?
No, it's not a game. We're from Earth.
From where?
From Earth.
Do you mean out of the ground? Are you sure you're feeling well?
Madam, we came in a flying ship across space. We're from the third planet, Earth. This is Mars. Now do you understand? Mars.
You go away now, you hear? I'll call my husband from upstairs and he'll chase you. Go on.
But this is Mars, isn't it?
This is Green Lake, Wisconsin, in the United States of America. Bounded on the east by the Atlantic and on the west by the Pacific. Now go away. Goodbye.
Horst, do you suppose it's really possible? I've got to find out more about this.
I told you I'd call my husband. Now you go away.
You've got to tell me one thing first. What year is this?
Year? 1928, of course. For goodness sake.
You hear that, Horst? And we know it's 1987. And we know this is Mars. Of course, is it possible that we got fouled up, made some tremendous blunder, circled around, and landed back on Earth?
In 1928?
Well, maybe some switch in time or dimension. Could we have shifted somehow, gone backward in time? Oh, Horst, this won't hold water. It's not logical. We checked every mile. We went past the moon, out into space. We're on Mars. Lustig out at point. Hingston in the rear. Keep that gun at half load.
Aye, sir.
Horst, there's got to be some cold, logical solution.
Captain!
What?
That house down the street, the white one with the green shutters.
Lustig, what's the matter?
I never thought of... Thank God!
Lustig! Lustig, come back here!
He's running for that house.
That crazy fool, after him, quick!
Lustig, stop!
Come down off of that porch!
Grandpa! Grandpa!
Lustig, what the devil do you think you're doing?
Albert!
Grandma, Grandpa, it is you.
Lustig, what is going on here?
Albert, it's been so many years.
How you've grown, boy.
It's so good to see you.
Lieutenant Lustig!
Captain, Grandma, I want you to meet my friends. This is Captain Black. Captain, I want you to meet my grandfolks.
Howdy. Any friend of Albert's is a friend of ours.
How long have you been here, Grandma?
Oh, a good many years. Ever since we died.
Ever since you what?
Oh, yes, sir. They've been dead 30 years.
What?
Oh, now, don't you trouble yourself. It's all right. We're alive again, that's all.
Do you mean to tell me that Mars is heaven?
Oh, nonsense, no. All we know is here we're alive again. And who are we to question God's infinite ways?
Well, Lustig, we're going back to the ship.
But, Captain, I want to talk to my grandpa.
Lieutenant Lustig, I don't like any part of this. You'll come back with us if I have to club you and carry you.
I see.
Now let's go! Heaven only knows what they've run up against back at the ship. Horst, look at that crowd around the ship.
Looks like we're being welcomed with a celebration, Captain.
Celebration! They've abandoned ship. Every port is open. No guard set. You, masters!
Hiya, Captain. Meet my old dad. Dad, that's Captain Black. He's not a bad guy for an officer.
Up on Hinkston!
What, sir?
Bring that band back. Use force if you have to.
Excuse me, sir. There's my Uncle George.
Hinkston!
I'll be right back, Captain. Uncle George!
What the devil is going on here?
Don't you understand, sir? They've all found friends and rallied.
They're all here!
You're right, Captain. I found it. The whole crew's out in the crowd.
But I gave orders. Definite orders.
You don't understand, Captain.
I understand, Newton. I don't care how many relatives show up. I'll have discipline.
Johnny! Johnny, you old son of a gun!
It's you, Edward.
Yes.
It can't be.
Oh, of course it is. Johnny,
Ed.
You old...
Ed, Dr. Horst, this is my brother, Edward.
How do you do?
Hello, sir.
It's wonderful to see you, Edward. Look, I've got to get back to my ship.
Oh, Johnny, wait. I almost forgot. Mom's waiting at home.
Mom?
Yeah, and Dad, too.
Mom and Dad are alive?
Then you're real, Ed.
Well, of course. Don't I feel real? How's that, huh?
Why, Ed!
We've got lunch for you, Johnny. Mom's making corn fritters.
Dr. Horst, haven't you found anybody?
No, Captain. I have nobody.
Well, then you come on home with me, right, Ed?
Why, sure.
Horst, you wouldn't believe it, but it's been 35 years since I had Mom's corn fritters. By George, 35 years.
Kitchen, so don't hold back, Johnny. You too, Dr. Horst.
Well, Johnny, you're still in the Navy, eh?
That's right, Dad. I'm in command of the ship.
We're an old Navy family, Dr. Horst. All three of our boys in the service.
Yeah, Ed was the best pilot in the Pacific, too. What did happen, Ed?
What's the difference? I'm here now.
Yeah, but...
You know, it's almost perfect. All we're missing is your brother, Will. Then the whole family could be together.
Well, it won't be long, Mom. Will's in charge of the XR-54. Next rocket coming out to Mars.
Oh. Well, little Will. When does he leave, Johnny?
Well, the takeoff's scheduled for September, but It depends on what we report.
Oh, yeah.
There's no question about that now, huh?
No.
Christmas together again. That'll be something.
Sure, yes. Will. Yes, sirree. Well, this calls for a celebration. How about a little of the old dandelion wine, eh, Johnny?
Now, Father, don't you go giving Johnny too much wine.
He's a big boy now, Mother. Well, sir, isn't everything just fine? Just fine.
Again, will you, Ed?
Oh, sure.
Well, Dr. Horst, what are you doing sitting over here alone? What do you think of my little family?
Very nice.
You know, I can't understand why you didn't find any folks here, Dr. Horst. It's just a shame everybody else is so happy.
Well, I never remembered my family, Mrs. Black. All I know is they were gassed at Dachau during the Second World War. When I was liberated, I was in delirium 3 months. I cannot remember anything before then. A psychiatric phenomena.
That's terrible. Isn't there anything anybody can do?
I don't want to remember. I have not had a pleasant life. I prefer to be free of emotional entanglements. They interfere with a scientific approach.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dr. Horst.
Oh, I'll get it. That's our ring, long and three shorts. I remember that.
Well, maybe we'd better call it a night. You must be getting tired, Johnny.
I'd better be going back to the ship.
Nonsense. You stay the night. We insist.
I just couldn't rest thinking of you all alone on that ship.
Why, I'll be all right. Well, good night.
Oh, wait a minute, Dr. Horst. That phone message was for you.
Me?
Yes, that's right. A message from Anna.
Anna? I don't...
Well, there, she must be an old friend. Isn't that nice?
I don't... You sure it was for me? I don't remember any Anna.
Well, she asked if you were better.
Perhaps she's someone who knew you at Dachau.
Anna?
She said she's coming over here first thing in the morning. So, you'll have to stay over.
Yes,
well,
but...
that settles it, then. You stay here, Horst. You can bunk with me in my old room.
Yeah, but, Johnny, we thought you'd like to be with Edward.
So you could talk the way you used to.
Well, we can't put Dr. Horst on the daybed. I think we'd better share the room tonight. Be plenty of time for talking, Ed.
Yes, I guess so.
Yeah, I suppose I better drop back to the ship. You know, Ed, security check.
What? Why do you have to do that here?
I don't know, Mom. There's no good reason, I guess. Suppose we skip it tonight, huh? Well, good night, everybody.
Oh, it's good to have you home, Johnny.
It's good to be home, Mom.
Captain Black.
Hmm?
You asleep?
No, I've been thinking about what we were expecting. Green-skinned Martians. All the time there was only Mom and Dad and Edward waiting. That's funny what tricks your imagination can play on you. Well, I guess Mars is heaven, Horst.
You know, I've been thinking about Martians, too.
Hmm?
Captain, just suppose there were Martians,
right,
and they saw us land, and suppose they thought of us as invaders. What would be the best weapon they could use against our atom bombs, huh?
I don't see what you're getting at.
They would want to disarm us first, huh? To wipe out all suspicion, to make us feel at home. Captain, suppose this house isn't real. Suppose the people are just images stolen from our own memories by Martians, created for us by telepathy. Hypnotism.
Oh, that's the craziest theory I ever heard.
Maybe that's why there was no one for me. Because in all my life, there is no happy memory. No real loved person. Not even my mother. I don't remember her. Only the piles of rotting corpses at Dachau. There was no happy emotion for these people to recreate.
How about that phone call? Anna?
Yes, Anna. I didn't remember who she was, but I do now. I just remembered. When I was freed from Dachau, sick, delirious, I raved about a wonderful, kind nurse named Anna that took care of me.
Well, there you are. It's logical. She's coming to see you tomorrow.
But there was no Anna. I'd been nursed by a man.
What?
Anna was only a dream. And there's only one way they could have learned about her, by reading my subconscious mind.
That's impossible, Horst.
Why? A whole crew was thinking of home. Suppose the Martians read our minds.
Yes, but if there are Martians...
If there are, they have us separated. Each man in a different house, sleeping. Trusting. No one at the guns.
I left my pistol downstairs. Do you think there's something to this, Horst?
It's a perfect trap, Captain. Who would suspect his own mother? His grandparents? How easy. Just a knife in the heart of each sleeping man.
That's impossible, Horst. We've got to get back to the ship.
Listen. The crickets have stopped. Come on. We don't know when they change back to... whatever they really are.
All right, careful.
Where are you going, John?
Ed, we wanted a drink of water. That's all, Ed.
You're not thirsty, John. You don't want a drink.
Look out!
You don't want a drink.
His face! It's changing! He's a Martian!
Run, Horst! Run!
You can't get away, John!
This way, Horst! Horst, where are you?
Hello! Hello! Can you hear me, Earth? This is Captain John Black, the XR-53, calling for Mars. I've locked myself in the ship, but they've crippled it. I can't take off or fire the guns, and they're coming for me now, the Martians. I'm all alone here. All the rest are dead. Hinkston, Lustig, Dr. Horst. Poor Horst, he didn't even reach the door. Listen, listen. They're trying to break through the hull. Edward and Mom, Dad, and all the folks. But they're changing now. They're melting and changing back into... They're Martians. Can you understand? Martians, not men. They made us think that Mars was heaven and we fell into the trap. Can you hear me, Earth? You've got to stop the next rocket. Listen, tell my brother Will. Tell my brother not to come. They'll trap him, too. They'll kill them all. Hello? Hello? Can you hear me, Earth? This is John Black on Mars. Hello, Earth? This is John Black on Mars. Hello, Earth! Hello, Earth!
The story of the fourth expedition was included in the Dimension X adaptation, but it was included in a very shortened version. But the series X-1 gave this story a full episode, allowing it to breathe and to have time to have its full impact. June 2001. And the moon be still as bright.
The first three expeditions for Mars left Earth in a mushroom of flame, arced through the atmosphere, and finally dwindled to tiny specks in the big eye of the Mount Palomar telescope, and then were lost to sight forever. The prearranged landing signals flashed back to Earth, and then the radios went dead. One after the other, ships had disappeared and were never heard from again. But still, the rockets came. The fourth expedition emerged from the silent gulfs of space, angled down toward the floating red disk of Mars, down into an orbit as the order came to land. The last blast of the bow jets broke red against the blue desert sands, and the ship slid to a halt at the edge of a vast city that reflected the icy glare of the moonlight. For a while, all was still.
All right, Park, you. Open the airlock.
Aye, sir.
Fresh air.
Hey, it's cold out here.
Who cares? We got here. I thought I'd never hit solid ground again.
Hey, how about a fire, Captain Wildey? It's freezing.
Later. We have work to do.
Oh, smell that air. Why, you could get drunk on it. Say, there's an idea. Why don't we break out a bottle of Alibrate?
Big, there will be no drinking done until we're secured.
But we're landed, Captain.
Three other expeditions landed and disappeared within 24 hours. Now, we're not relaxing security till we find out what happened to them.
What do you mean? Maybe Martians?
Sender, you're an archaeologist. How old would you say they are?
I can't tell till I study them more closely. It's the kind of engineering we couldn't duplicate on Earth.
Well, I'm not interested in the architecture now. I want to make sure there's nothing there that might be dangerous. Mr. Hathaway.
Yes, sir?
I want you and Spender to take a reconnaissance party into the city and find out what's there. We'll set up camp here. No man is to go more than 50 feet from this rocket. And there'll be no celebration till Hathaway and his party report back.
In the sea bottoms, the wind stirred along faint vapors. And from the mountains, great stone visages looked upon the silvery rocket and the small fire. The sky was black overhead as the two racing moons threw knife-edged double shadows on the desert.
All right, come and get it. Ciao.
Hey, what do you got these, Jackie?
Soda smothered in cold chicken fat.
Good, I thought it was something I couldn't eat.
Hey, Captain, Mr. Hathaway's back.
Oh, Captain Wilder.
Oh, yes, over here, Mr. Hathaway. Well?
Most of the city's dead. Spender says it's been dead a good many thousand years, but we found one part about a mile over
toward
the...
What about it?
People were living in it last week, sir.
People? Martians. Where are they now?
Dead. We found bodies, thousands of bodies. They hadn't been dead more than 10 days.
What did they die of?
You won't believe it.
What killed them?
Chickenpox.
Chickenpox?
Yes.
Where could they get chickenpox?
From Earth.
Oh, then the other rockets did get through.
Yes. I don't know what the Martians did to them, but I sure know what they did to the Martians. They gave them chickenpox and wiped them out. They just didn't have any resistance to an Earth disease.
Think of it, Captain. A race builds itself for a million years, refines itself, does everything it can to give itself respect and beauty, and then it dies.
Of what?
It's like saying the Greeks died of mumps or the proud Roman Empire collapsed because of athlete's foot. We didn't even give them a decent excuse for dying. We just gave them chicken pox.
Spender, get hold of yourself. You didn't see those bodies, Captain.
Yes, I know. It must have been a shock. You need a rest, a little relaxation. The Martians are dead. There's nothing you can do about that now.
Hey, you hear that? The Martians are all dead. Come on, let's break out a bottle and hoop it out.
Hey, hey, hey.
How about a case, hey?
Oh, good Lord. They have to do that now. Isn't there time later to throw old beer cans into the canals?
Bender, you're an idealist. They're not. All they know now is that they're safe. Little shouting won't hurt. You think too much.
I was safe on Mars. The first Earthmen on Mars. We're going to celebrate. Yahoo!
Twenty bottles were opened and drunk. The voices got louder. The Earth laughs and shouts echoing across the empty Martian sands. Spender listened to the wind over his ears, cool and whispering. He felt the land getting cooler. The stars grew closer, very near. The air smelled clean and new. He looked at the cool ice of the white Martian buildings over there on the empty sea lands.
Oh, what a woman!
Hey, what do we do with these empty bottles?
Save them, stupid. There's a 2 cents deposit.
Throw them away.
Hey, wait. How about that building? 2-1 on a buck. I can heave one right through that window.
You're up.
All right, here goes. Hey! Bullseye! Hey, double or nothing on the next shot.
Put that bottle down, Biggs.
Who's there, Mr. Spender?
Stop smashing those windows.
What's the difference? The planet's ours now. I guess I can do anything with it I want.
Drop that bottle or I'll knock your teeth out.
Yeah? Hey, just watch me.
I warned you, big...
Come on.
What's going on here? Bender! I hit him.
He's crazy, Captain. He just walked up and slugged me.
All right, Biggs. Spender, you come with me. Now, suppose you explain. What was the idea?
The noise, the drunken brawl.
Friend, the men are tired. This has been a long trip. And you have a different way of seeing things.
Oh, I'm seeing things, all right. I'm seeing how we'll ruin Mars. We'll rip it up and rip the skin off the way we've already ruined Earth.
Is that why you hit Biggs?
Yes. I couldn't stand the idea of them watching us make fools of ourselves.
Damn.
The Martians. They're dead. They're all dead. But they know we're here. Doesn't an old thing always know when a new thing comes? We've come a long way to smash their windows and spit in their wine.
Well, maybe you're right. But I'm still going to fine you $50 for that fight. Now, come on, Spender. Suck in your chin. We'll go back there and play happy.
Now they moved out into the moonlight across the desert. They made their way into the dreaming, dead city. The light of the racing twin moons glinted on the barrel of a pistol, the long blade of a machete, the round, gurgling shape of a raised bottle. The wind blew in from the dead sea bottom and brushed through the silvery wire filigree of the towers. Strange music drifted down to the double-shadowed streets. A thin, haunted music that played as it had played through the uncounted years of time. Nobody moved. The moons held and froze them. The wind beat slowly around them.
Hey! Hey, you people in the city!
Pigs.
I just want to make a little noise. What kind of a celebration is this, anyway?
Come on.
They built this city thousands of years ago. And now where are they? How did they die?
Who cares? They're dead. That's good enough for me.
Lord Byron.
What?
Lord Byron, a 19th century poet. He wrote a poem that fits this city. Might have been written by the last Martian poet. So we'll go no more a-roving so late into the night. Though the heart be still as loving, though the moon be still as bright. For the sword outwears its sheath, and the soul outwears its breast. And the heart must pause to breathe, and love itself must rest. Though the night was made for loving and the day returns too soon, yet we'll go no more a-roving by the light of the moon.
Without a word, the Earthmen stood in the center of the city. It was a clear night. There was not a sound except the music of the wind. At their feet lay a tile court, worked into the shapes of ancient animals and images. They stood there, silvered by the double moons beneath the crystal towers of Mars. And then Biggs was sick, and the sour stench of liquor filled the cool air. The men of Earth had come to Mars. And Spender turned and walked away into the city, alone in the moonlight, never once stopping to look back. It was a morning that might have been a Monday, or a Tuesday, or any day on Mars. Biggs was on the canal rim, his feet hung down in the cool water, soaking, while he took the sun in his face.
Hey, what are you doing back here, Biggs? Didn't you go out with the search party?
Yeah. I come back. I got a blister.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What do you mean? Look. Look, Cherokee, see that? Anyway, I had enough searching. 4 days hunting for that screwball Spender.
Didn't find him yet, huh?
Oh, good riddance. Oh, my feet. I'm going to soak them in the canal. If I was Wilder, I wouldn't worry about that nut Spender. Let him go. He's a crackpot anyway.
He's a little foggy upstairs, I guess. Hey, why don't you take your feet out of that canal, Biggs? I got to make coffee out of that water.
Coffee? You call that stuff coffee? I had a motorcycle once that dripped grease. It tasted better than...
Hey, wait a minute, Biggs. Hey, look over there.
Where?
By that bush. There's someone there.
Hey.
It's him. Hey, Spender!
Spender?
He's coming over.
Why'd he stay lost, that crazy jerk?
Hi, Spender. Long time no see.
Hello, Cherokee. I've been exploring some ruins.
Oh, you and them ruins. You're like a dog in a boneyard. What's the matter? Why don't you say something? Where you been?
Up in the hills. What would you say if I told you I found a Martian?
Oh, yeah?
Where?
Never mind. Let me ask you a question. How would you feel if you were a Martian and people came to your land and started to tear it up?
Well, I know how I'd feel. I've got Cherokee blood in me. My grandfather told me a lot of things about the way they kicked the Indians around in the Oklahoma Territory. If there's any Martian around, I'm all for him.
How about you, Biggs?
They're dead. They're all dead. It's a good thing, too.
Well, I found a Martian. Up in a dead town in the hills. I've been reading their books, and they're easy to understand. And I've learned their language. And then I found this Martian. And I brought him here, now.
I don't see no Martian.
I'm the last Martian.
What did you say?
Biggs, I'm going to kill you.
Oh, cut it out. What kind of a lousy joke is that? Now, don't put that gun away. You're kidding, huh? Spender, you're...
He's dead. You killed him.
You can come with me, Cherokee. You're an Indian. You know how the Martians would feel. You can be with me in this.
You killed him. You just killed him.
He deserved it.
You're crazy.
Maybe I am. But you can come with me.
Come with you? For what? Go on, get out of here, you crazy murderer.
Of all of them, I thought you'd understand.
I thought you'd remember what happened to your own people.
You get out of here, you crazy murdering...
Don't reach for that gun!
Spender. Spender!
Hathaway, break out the arms locker. Issue pistols, rifles, and grenades.
Yes, sir.
And you'd better get the Bible out of the navigation chest. We have to bury these two. Well, Proctor, you start digging a grave. Hmm?
How about Spender?
We'll have to go up in the hills and find him.
Just let me at him with my bare hands, a crazy murdering louse.
That's enough, Proctor. Man is sick. He must be.
Sick my eye. He's
That's enough. Now grab a shovel and start digging.
Spender saw the thin dust rising in the valley, and he knew the pursuit was beginning. The sun burned farther up the sky, and the blue sand drifted lazily across the sea bottom below. He sat beside a quiet pool 10,000 years old and held the silver book. Through the house played the strange wind music of ancient Mars, and he heard voices whisper in his mind.
I hear you. I've always heard you. Even down there on Earth. No, I won't run. What's the use?
Live, Earthman. Live.
What for? To see them tear down your temples and put up hot dog stands?
Run.
They've seen me now. They know I'm up here. There's Wilder now. I've got him right in my sights.
Kill, Earthman.
Funny, he hasn't ordered them to use grenades. They could lob one right up here and blow me to bits. Yeah, maybe the captain thinks I'm too nice to be blown to bits. He wants my death to be clean. Just one bullet hole in me, nothing messy. And why? Because he understands me.
Kill.
The only one in the crew who ever did.
Kill.
Well, at least I can do the same for him. Just one bullet in his head, a nice clean death. All I have to do is pull the trigger and then... It's no use. I can't do it to him.
Spender! Can you hear me, Spender?
I hear you, Captain. What do you want?
Talk! Truth!
All right. Come on up. Leave your gun down there. Keep your hands up.
Oh. That's quite a climb. You mind if I sit down? Oh. How long do you think you can hold out?
Until you're all dead.
Oh, why didn't you kill all of us this morning when you had the chance? You could have.
I know. I got sick. I started killing people. I realized they were just fools and I shouldn't be killing them, but it was too late. So I came up here where I could get angry again.
Why did you do it?
When I was a kid, my folks took me to visit Mexico City. Now, always remember the way my father acted, loud and big. And my mother didn't like the people because she thought they didn't wash enough. I can see my mother and my father coming to Mars and acting the same way. Anything that's strange is no good to us. We aren't fit to take over this planet.
But to kill two men.
How would you feel if a Martian spit on the White House floor?
You know, you haven't acted very civilized yourself.
I'll kill you all off, Wilder. That'll delay the next rocket 5 years, and then I'll kill them, too. And if I'm lucky, I'll live to be 60. And I'll meet every expedition that lands on Mars. Oh, I'll be very friendly. I'll explain our rocket blew up one day. And then I'll kill them off. I'll save Mars for half a century. And by then, maybe the Earth people will give up.
And yet you're outnumbered. We already have you surrounded. In an hour, you would be dead.
I found an underground passage that'll take me back in the hills, Wilder. I'll go back there. And then I'll pick you off one by one.
We'll see. Well, it's a nice town you've got here, Spender. It's beautiful. I'd like to live here.
You can. Join me.
You're not like them. Why go back to them, Captain? I'll show you what a good life these people had.
No, there's too much Earth blood in me. I may even agree with you about all this, but that does not change what I must do.
You won't stay?
No. This is your last chance, Bender. Look, you're sick. Now come along with me quietly.
No. One last thing. If you win, do me a favor. Try to see that they don't tear this planet apart.
Right.
And if it helps, just think of me as a very crazy fellow who went berserk one summer day. It'd be easier on you that way.
I'll think that over. So long, Spender.
Bye, Captain. Good luck.
The men spread out again, walking and then running on the hot hillside places where there would be sudden cool grottos that smelled of moss and sudden open blasting places that smelled of sun or stone. The men ran and ducked and ran and squatted in the shadows.
I'll blow his brains!
Captain Wilder hugged the rock warmed by the sun. He gasped, for the air was thin and not meant for running. Spender lay at the top of the hill, and a gap in the rocks showed the white of his shirt against the shadows. Wilder looked at the towers of the little clean Martian village, like sharply carved chess pieces lying in the afternoon. He saw the rocks, and the interval between, where Spender's chest was revealed.
Go on, Spender, get out. You've only got a few seconds to escape. Go on, get out of the caves. Come back later. You go now. I've got to win this. I've got to think that I'm right and pull this trigger. Go now. Get out.
I'll get him. A slug in the head. I'll blow his bloody brain.
No, Puck Hill. Put down that gun. I'll do this myself.
Spender. Why didn't you get out? Why? Why?
Why?
They buried him in that ancient valley town, where the music of the wind played on through the days and the nights. They laid him in an ancient silver sarcophagus with waxes and wines which were 10,000 years old, his hands folded on his chest. The last they saw of him was his peaceful face in the cold silver light of the racing twin moons. The captain found the poem in Spender's pocket, and he read it before he shut the marble door.
So we'll go no more a-roving so late into the night. Though the heart be still as loving, and the moon be still as bright. Though the night was made for loving, and the day returns too soon, yet we'll go no more a-roving by the light of the moon.
The next afternoon, Parkhill did some target practice in one of the dead cities, shooting out the crystal windows and blowing the tops off the fragile towers. Captain Wilder caught Parkhill and nearly knocked his teeth out.
Dimension X then took three very, very short interstitial stories from the Martian Chronicles and compiled them into one. That's August 2001, The Settlers, February 2002, The Locusts, and October 2002, The Shore.
The men of Earth came to Mars. They came because they were afraid or unafraid, because they were happy or unhappy, because they felt like pilgrims or did not feel like pilgrims. The government posters screamed, "There's work for you in the sky. See Mars!" The men shuffled forward, all kinds of men, all coming for different reasons. The rockets came like drums beating in the night. They came like locusts, swarming and settling in blooms of rosy smoke. Mars was a distant shore, and the settlers spread upon it in waves. First the pioneers and builders, then the people of civilization. Some came because they were afraid of a coming war on Earth. Some came because they were afraid of nothing. Some came to escape from the smell of the subways and the cabbage tenements.
These next two stories appear in a different order in Dimension X than they appeared in Martian Chronicles, but they both had the same date. November. The off-season.
On the Martian desert beside the highway, there rose a blare of red and yellow neon lights that spelled the death of Jeff Spender's dream. Sam's hot dog stand is what the sign read. And Sam, of course, was the same Sam Parkhill who had fought with Spender years before. 10,000 rockets were reported leaving soon for Mars, with 100,000 hungry customers. And Sam wanted to be ready for them.
Hey, look up there, Emma. See that green star up there? That's Earth. Good old wonderful Earth. Makes you feel almost reverent, don't it?
Yeah.
Sammy, you're hungry and you're starved. Something. That's a poem I learned at school. Come on, Earth, send me your rockets. Here's Sam Parkhill with the only hot dog stand on Mars.
Sam, what if the rockets don't come? What if there's a war on Earth?
Don't worry, they're coming all right. Ain't nothing gonna happen to spoil my plans, baby. I figured it all out.
Sam! Hey, Sam, look up there! Earth!
Well, where? Oh, no.
It's catching fire. It's burning.
No, that can't be Earth. Helma, they can't do this to me. I got all our money invested in this place.
Go ahead, Sam. Switch on more lights. Turn up the music. Get the hot dogs on the fire. There'll be another batch of customers coming along in about 100 million years.
Oh, no, it couldn't be.
What a swell spot for a hot dog stand. Let you in on a little secret, Sam. This looks like it's going to be an off-season.
And next, a short story in the Martian Chronicles, made even shorter by Dimension X. Bradbury's observation on the effects such news would have on mundane everyday life. November 2005, the luggage store.
The light beam radio crackled with the news. By morning, the shelves of the luggage store were empty, and the rockets were blasting off, headed back to Earth. In a few days, everyone was gone, and the planet of Mars once more lay deserted and silent.
The original title of our next tale was Dwellers in Silence, and that is the title that X-1 used for their adaptation. This adaptation also changed the action, moving it from Mars to Earth, and changed the date and the details of the war to make it a self-contained story. The impact is still the same. It's a thoughtful, thought-provoking story, whether it takes place on Earth or Mars, whether it's 20 years after the war, or, as in the original, April 2026. The Long Years.
Twenty years since the last of the giant migration ships had crashed to the surface of Mars, bearing its pitiful handful of survivors of the Earth Wars. 20 years of longing, of turning eyes toward the green Earth as it hung on the horizon like a beckoning light. And now it was done. And the first new ship, built of shining Martian chromaton, had lifted bravely toward home with 3 men locked in its metal belly.
There it is. Barely see the top of the Atomic Trades building in the twilight. I never finished building.
Captain.
What is it?
Am I going out of my mind? Look, out that way, to the west.
Could that be...
My heaven, it is. Those are lights. Turn the ship. Full cruising speed.
They are lights. Captain, it's a city, a whole blasted city lit up like a Christmas tree. What do you think of your dead planet now, Williams?
Decelerate to -5. We're going to take her down.
Unbelievable. We've been walking for hours now and not a soul to be seen.
There must be someone. How do you explain the lights?
Unless they've been burning like this for 20 years.
Impossible.
I don't know.
Municipal building.
We have a look here, sir?
Possibly the records might contain some. That's a good idea. Keep your weapons ready. We'll start right here with the city clerk's office. Better check radiation again, doctor.
Well, not enough to do any damage.
Gives you the creeps, doesn't it? Look at this desk. Papers crumpled, inkstand. Just as if somebody came in and worked here every day. Dog licenses, hunting permits.
That's strange. Hmm? There's ink in that inkstand.
Well, what of it?
Well, you'd think standing open for 20 years, it would have dried up. Good heavens.
If I hadn't heard it with my own ears, Evans, did that phone ring?
Yes. Well?
Pick it up, doctor.
Hello?
Good day, doctor. How are you? I called to ask some advice about a trepanning problem. Can you tell me if the lateral cut should be made first?
Hello. Hello. This is absolutely insane. Hello.
Thank you, doctor. I'll do that. By the way, how is your wife, Alice? And the girls? And your son, John? Fine boy, John. I'll call again tomorrow. Goodbye, doctor.
Hello. Hello. Gone dead.
Who was it?
I don't know. Strange voice carried on a conversation about some surgical operation without paying the slightest attention to anything I said. Captain,
what is it?
Listen. Someone is coming, walking slowly toward the corridor.
Coming closer.
Jumping Jupiter. It's a man. An old man.
Are you... Is it really someone? You seem to be... Real. I saw the ship come down, and I thought perhaps I was losing my mind. It's been so many years.
I'm Captain John Parsons. These are my assistants, Dr. Evans and Mr. Williams. We returned to Earth from Mars.
Then it's happened. When we're not alone anymore. Forgive me, gentlemen, if I seem moved. I've waited and hoped for so long.
You survived the radiation.
We did.
There are others.
My family. We are the only ones.
I answered the phone a moment ago. Who was it?
You heard my voice, Doctor.
Yours?
Yes. To break the loneliness. I've recorded my voice and rigged up an automatic telephone. It's pleasant to hear the phone ring. I come here to work.
I take it you are a medical man.
My name is Cornelius Hathaway.
Hathaway? Hathaway, the brain surgeon?
You know my name.
Who doesn't? I watched you on television at college. Why, I saw you 23 years ago, you performed a difficult surgery for a cerebral tumor.
Thank you. I'd almost forgotten. My mind, you see, I'm almost 80 now.
Well, you look fine, sir.
We've had the best of everything. An entire city to choose from. Cold storage, the best equipment. But come. There's a fine dinner waiting for you, and you want to meet my family. When I saw the ship come down, I told Alice, my wife, you know, to prepare a feast. It's a great day for me, gentlemen. A great, great day. Alice, come out to the porch and see who we have here. Alice, you here? Come out. My wife, gentlemen. Alice, Captain Parsons, Dr. Evans, Mr. Williams.
How do you do?
And now, if you will follow me in, gentlemen, we'll meet my children.
Lord, what a beautiful woman.
She looks no more than 35.
Do you suppose the radiation could have done that to her?
I don't know.
And these are my daughters, Susan and Marguerite, and my son, John.
How do you do?
How do you do, sir?
Sit down, gentlemen, sit down. We'll have a feast in honor of this occasion. Susan, Marguerite, get the best silverware and the damask napkins. And, John, fetch the champagne.
Yes, Father. Excuse me a moment, John.
Sir?
How old are you?
23, sir.
Thank you. What is it, Captain? Something wrong?
Nothing.
Except that it's impossible. You see, Dr. Hathaway's son was already in college when I started. That would make him at least 45. That was a wonderful meal, Mrs. Hathaway. Doctor, your wife is an exceptional woman.
Thank you, sir.
How would you gentlemen like some fresh gingerbread with your coffee? I've baked it this morning.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Smell that, Doctor.
It's like coming home, Mrs. Hathaway.
It's like home having you here.
Mrs. Hathaway, may I compliment you on having preserved your youth and beauty so well?
Thank you. We have no worries here. No competition. All the things we need for material comfort.
Parsons and I were wondering, Dr. Hathaway, if the radioactivity had any effect in preserving tissue. Your children all look so young, too.
It is possible, gentlemen, of course. Radiation does strange things to living tissue. Alice, could we have some champagne? Alice.
Oh, I'm sorry. What, John?
Some champagne, please.
Champagne? Oh, yes, of course.
An amazing woman. Did you ever see such grace, such complete relaxation?
It doesn't seem quite natural.
I beg your pardon, gentlemen?
Captain Parsons was just about to ask how you and your family managed to escape, Dr. Hathaway.
We were very fortunate. You see, my home was in the Sierra Mountains at the time. I had a lead-lined laboratory in the basement where I did X-ray research. My hobby, you know. I chose this house because it was on a hill where I could watch the sky. Oh, the loneliness of those first years.
But at least you had your wife and children.
Yes, yes, I had my family. If it were not for them, gentlemen, I assure you, I would long ago have put a bullet in my head.
Champagne, Captain?
Oh, thank you, Mrs. Hathaway. May I propose a toast?
Oh, let me. Gentlemen, to Earth.
To Earth.
Earth. May she never be stranger to man. And
Hathaway, what is it? Are you all right?
Oh, it's nothing. It's nothing, really. Just a rather sharp pain in the chest. Why don't you gentlemen go out on the porch and enjoy the air? You've had a long and tiring journey. Alice will show you the way.
Will you be all right, John?
Yes, don't trouble yourself. I'll see you all in the morning.
Good night, Doctor.
Good night. Come, John.
Yes, Father.
Well, what do you think of old Mother Earth now, Williams? Ah, smell that summer breeze. Look at that view of the city lighted up against the sky.
It has a certain quality. Well, score 1 point for the back-to-earth proponents.
I didn't say that.
You're beginning to feel it, though, Williams, I can tell.
If you don't mind, gentlemen, I'm quite tired. I think I'll turn in. Excuse me?
Well, Captain?
Well, what?
What do you make of all this?
I don't know what you mean.
This Hathaway and his family. There's something strange and unnatural going on here. I can sense it.
Oh, I think you're reading things into it, Doctor.
Perhaps. Well, I'll turn in, too. Coming?
In a moment. I want to smoke a cigarette.
It's a very beautiful view, is it not?
Oh, I didn't hear you come out. How is he?
Resting. I've never seen him this bad.
Yes, he's an old man. I'm sorry, but the difference in your ages is so apparent. You must have been married very young.
You don't know about us, then?
No.
Perhaps it is better that way.
I don't follow you. Is it something about your husband? He acts very strangely.
My husband is a very great man, Captain. It is too bad there was no one to appreciate him. Once he wired the whole city with sound speakers. And when he pressed a button, the whole town lit up and made noises as if 10,000 people were living in it.
He must have been very lonesome. Although, with a woman such as you, I don't understand.
Perhaps one day you will understand.
I hope you will come to trust me as a friend.
I can trust no one but him. Good night, Captain.
Good night, Mrs. Hathaway.
Captain. Captain Parsons.
What are you doing? Who's there?
Dr. Evans.
Oh, what's wrong? What time is it anyway?
2 a.m.
What's wrong?
I couldn't sleep. A few minutes ago, I heard someone slip out the front door. In the moonlight, I saw it was the old man. He was headed toward the ship.
What are you suggesting, Doctor?
Nothing, except that it's fairly unnatural for an old man with a bad heart to go wandering off at 2 in the morning.
Very well. We'll follow him. This is far enough.
What do you suppose he's doing? What are those on the ground?
Good Lord, those are grave markers. 4 of them.
You're right. He seems to be praying over them.
Listen.
Do you forgive me for what I have done? I had to do it. I was so lonely. So terribly lonely. You don't mind too much. You do forgive me, don't you? Yes. Yes, I feel you do. Well, I'm glad. I think perhaps I can rest now. I think...
Oh. He's having another attack. Come on. Hathaway. Dr. Hathaway, can you hear me? Raise his head, Evans. Dr. Hathaway.
His lips are moving.
What is it, Doctor?
Closer. Lean closer. I'm sorry I had to spoil all of this. I've expected it for some time.
We'll fix you up.
No. No, I'm an excellent diagnostician. It really doesn't matter. Except for them.
What about them, Hathaway?
You suspected, didn't you?
Yes, I suspected. But I couldn't believe it until now. Do they know?
No. No, they wouldn't understand. I wouldn't want them to know. Ever.
Doctor?
He's dead, Captain. What was it he meant about your suspecting?
Light a match, Dr. Evans. Look on those 4 grave markers and tell me what you see.
Good heavens.
Well?
Alice Hathaway, Marguerite Hathaway, Susan Hathaway, John Hathaway, died July 1987. But that's 20 years ago. It's impossible. If these markers are correct, then... who are those others?
Can't you guess, Doctor? Can't you guess? I'm sorry, Mrs. Hathaway.
He didn't want us to feel badly. He told us it would happen one day and that he didn't want us to cry. He didn't teach us how, you know. He said it was the worst thing that could happen, to know how to be lonely and unhappy. We weren't to know what death is.
Perhaps it's just as well.
You know about us, don't you?
Yes, I know. I didn't think you knew yourself.
The children don't. I have been aware for a long while.
No one would have guessed. You're so perfect.
He would have liked to hear you say that. He was so very proud of us. After a while, he came to love us. And at the end, he took us as his real wife and children. He even forgot sometimes that he had made us.
You gave him a great deal of comfort.
Yes. Over the years, we sat and talked. He loved so much to talk. I was first, you know. Then he became lonesome for the children, and so he made them. There was only one thing, one flaw.
And that?
He couldn't make us grow old. And so he had to watch himself become an old, old man. While we stayed young. It was a great blow to him.
We'll bury him on the hillside where the other 4 crosses are. I think he would like that.
Yes, he would.
Mrs. Hathaway, Alice, I think that you are a very great and wonderful woman. A And so we commend the body of this man, John Hathaway, to his maker. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust returneth. Amen.
Come, John.
Yes, Mother.
Susan, Marguerite.
Evans, Williams, stay here a moment, please.
What is it?
Let them go back to the house. I want to speak to you.
I know what you're going to tell us, Captain. I saw the names on the grave markers.
Well?
It's a mockery, a blasphemy of everything we believe in. For a man to do something so evil.
Can't you imagine what he faced? Can't you imagine what it must have been like to have watched his wife and children die slowly of radiation burns? To know that he was the last man on the face of the earth, alone, eternally and unalterably alone. Good Lord, man, what would you have done if you'd had his medical and technical genius? I'll tell you. You'd have come back to your laboratory just as he did and tried to recapture all the wonderful things that they had been to you. You'd use all the power of your memory, all the accuracy of your fingers, and you'd try to put together, bit by bit, all those things that were wife, son, and daughter.
It's incredible.
So you suggest that we take them back, Captain? I don't know. We haven't enough space in the ship for that. Every ounce counts. Still, to leave them here like that, alone.
I think I have an answer, cold-blooded as it may seem.
Go on.
I suggest that we turn them off.
Do you think I could do that?
No, but I think I could. After all, they aren't human. They're worse than robots. They're ghoulish. I suggest you go back to the ship, Captain, and leave me to deal with them.
I will not permit it.
You've no choice in the matter. I assure you it'll be quick and entirely painless.
I hate to admit it, but he's right, Captain. We can't take them with us, and it would be less than human to leave them here without Hathaway. They were created by him for himself. They have no other feelings, no other purpose. If you leave them, they'll go on year after year, night after night, talking, laughing, baking strawberry biscuits for no reason, not knowing who they are, why they exist.
Could you do it, Doctor?
I don't know.
I've already offered to do it.
No. No, I wouldn't want it to be you, Williams. You're sick. You have no feelings. If Dr. Evans here can do it, well, so be it.
It's a difficult thing, Captain.
Still, as you say, they aren't human. Logic is on your side. It isn't as if you were murdering someone. Well,
give me the blast gun, William.
We'll wait in the ship. Take off in half an hour.
Half an hour.
He should be back soon.
Yes.
He's doing the only humane thing, Captain. They're less than human.
Are they?
Well, it's done now. No one will ever... That's the airlock. He's back.
Well, here's your gun.
Did you do it?
When I entered the house, one of the daughters looked up at me, and she smiled. The others smiled. He taught them that, taught them to make him feel welcome when he came home at night. I knew that, and yet, well, I should have done it then. I might have, but she came in, the wife. She said something about sitting down for a cup of tea. She looked at me with those fine, intelligent eyes. I couldn't do it. It would be murder, cold-blooded murder.
I prayed you wouldn't be able to do it. There will never be anything as fine as they are, you know. Built to last 100, 200, perhaps 1,000 years. Well, get the course in the integrator, Williams. We'll take off in 20 minutes. I should be back by then.
You're going out, sir?
I'm going to say goodbye.
You've come back.
Only to say goodbye.
It was nice of you.
I wanted you to know that I'm coming back.
Here? To us?
Here. To you.
I believe you.
I never meant anything more.
When will you come?
I don't know. It'll take many years to prepare fuel for another trip. 6, 7, perhaps 10 years.
I will watch the sky at night, just as he watched it.
I'm not a young man.
Time is nothing to me. I was born out of time.
I'm afraid I must go now.
I understand. Strange. I have a new feeling. One which he didn't teach us. A feeling of longing, of sadness.
That one is not taught. It comes of being alive.
Yes, I am alive. Even though he created me, I'm a person now.
Goodbye, Alice Hathaway.
Goodbye, John Parsons.
This next story is one of the most well-known Ray Bradbury stories of all time. However, there are many, many changes between the original story and this adaptation by X-1. You'll note, of course, the year, which is different from the title that we find in Ray Bradbury's Martian Chronicles. August 2026. There Will Come Soft Rains.
The house was a good house, planned and built to be lived in the year 1980. The real estate agent had told them all about it.
Now, this is the bedroom. Of course, it contains all the latest devices, self-warming blankets, and, there's a brand new feature. Beds, which make themselves. Now, if you'll just step this way through the library, we can see the latest in talking book recorders, self-building fireplace, self-cleaning robot dust disposal. Oh, these little mouse-like things come out of the wall and take away all the dirt. Now, over this way. There's a complete robot kitchen, of course. Just set the menu for the week and the stove does the rest. Then there's the automatic hydroponic garden, self-sprinkling fire protection. See, the house is fully automatic. Well, you could go away for a year and it would run itself.
And so the family took the house, the man and the woman and the two children, a boy and a girl. And they lived contentedly, enjoying music and poetry and the rich, warm things in life. And the house fed them and slept them and entertained them. It made a good life for them. Until one day, there were 10,000 explosions, and the world shook, and red fire and ashes and radioactivity fell from the sky. The happy time was over.
Tick-tock, 7 o'clock, time to rise, open your eyes. Tick-tock, 7 o'clock. Time to rise, open your eyes.
But the house lay empty. The clock talked to the empty morning. In the kitchen, the stove sighed and ejected from its warm interior 8 eggs, sunny side up, 12 bacon slices, 2 coffees, and 2 cups of hot cocoa.
7-9, breakfast time, come and dine, 7-9.
Today is April 28th, 1985. Today, remember, is Mr. Featherstone's birthday. Insurance, gas, atom heat, and electricity bills are due.
In the walls, relays clicked. Memory tapes glided under electric eyes. Recorded voices moved beneath steel meters. But no doors slammed. No carpets took the quick tread of rubber heels. At 8:30, the eggs began to shrivel. An aluminum wedge scraped them into the sink.
9:15, time to clean. 9:15, time to clean.
Out of the wall, hundreds of tiny mechanical mice darted. The rooms were a crawl with small cleaning animals, all rubber and metal. They sucked up the hidden dust and dirt and popped back into their burrows. At 10 o'clock, the sun came out from behind the rain. The house stood alone on a street where all the other houses were rubble and ashes. At night, the ruined town gave off a radioactive glow which could be seen for miles. At 10:15, the garden sprinkler filled the soft morning air with golden fountains. The water tinkled over the charred west side of the house, the side which had been facing the blast. It was black, except in five places. One of the five places was a silhouette of a man mowing a lawn, just as he'd been the instant the radioactivity burned his image into the side of the house. Over there, a woman bent to pick flowers. Still further over, their images burned into the wood, where a small boy, hands flung into the air, higher up the image of a thrown ball, and opposite, a girl, her hands raised to catch a ball, which never came down. Five people. Five spots of paint. On the front porch, the dog whined and shivered. The front door recognized the dog's voice and opened. The dog padded in wearily, thin to the bone, covered with sores. It ran to the kitchen and pawed the kitchen door wildly. Behind the door, the stove was making pancakes, which filled the house with their odor, as prescribed by the automatic preset menu selector. The dog frogged, ran insanely, spun in a circle, biting its tail, and died.
1 o'clock, 1 o'clock.
Delicately sensing decay, the regiments of mice hummed out of the walls, soft as blown leaves, their electric eyes glowing.
1:15.
The dog was gone.
2:15.
Bridge tables unfolded from the walls of the patio. Playing cards fluttered onto pads. Martinis appeared on an oaken bench. But the tables were silent, the cards untouched.
5 o'clock, 6 o'clock. 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock.
Dinner was made, ignored, flushed away. Dishes were washed. In the study, the tobacco stand produced a cigar with half an inch of gray ash upon it, smoking, waiting, waiting. The hearth fire bloomed out of nothing.
9 o'clock, 9 o'clock.
The beds began to warm their hidden circuits, and the phonograph spoke from beside the fireplace.
Mrs. McClelland, what poem would you like to hear this evening? Mr. McClelland? Since you express no preference, I shall select at random from among your favorites. Sarah Teasdale, There Will Come Soft Rains.
There will come soft rains and the smell of the ground and swallows circling with their shimmering song. And frogs in the pools singing at night, and wild plum trees in tremulous white. Robins will wear their feathery fire, whistling their whims on a low fence wire. And not one will know of war. Not one will care at last when it is done. Not one would mind, neither bird nor tree, if mankind perished utterly. And spring herself, when she woke at dawn, would scarcely know that we were gone.
The phonograph finished the poem. The empty chairs faced each other between the silent walls. At 10 o'clock that evening, the house began to die. The wind blew the bough of a falling tree into the kitchen window, smashing it. A bottle of cleaning fluid crashed on the stove. Water pumps shot down from the ceiling, but the solvent spread onto the doors, making fire as it went, other voices in other rooms taking up the alarm.
Help! 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 Help!
The windows broke with the heat, and the wind blew in to help the fire. The fire crackled upstairs at paintings, lay hungrily on the beds, devoured the rooms. The house began to shudder. The bared skeleton began to cringe in the heat. The wires revealed as if a surgeon had torn the skin off. Voices screamed in every room.
Help! 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 Help!
Windows snapped open and shut like undecided mouths.
The time is now 10:10. The time is now 10:10. Run, 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 run
A thousand things were happening at once. Like the interior of a clock shop at midnight, all the clocks were striking, making a merry-go-round of squeaking, whispering, and rushing. In the kitchen, the stove hissing hysterically was making breakfast at a psychopathic rate. 10 dozen pancakes, 6 dozen loaves of toast. Then, there was silence. The film spools were burned out, the wires withered, and the circuits cracked. Then the house began to breathe its last. The beams began to give at the foundations. Long cracks appeared in the concrete. The seams were burst from the heat. And finally, with a huge rumble, it crashed into dust and rubble. Dawn shone faintly in the east. In the ruins of the house, only one wall remained standing. And within the wall, even as the sun rose to shine upon the burning rubble, a voice spoke again and again and again.
No one would mind, neither bird nor tree, if mankind perished utterly. And spring herself, when she woke at dawn, would scarcely know that we were gone. That we were gone. That we were gone. That we were gone.
And so, from Rocket Summer, January 1999, to this, the final story of the Martian Chronicles, the final chronicle of the transition, October 2026. The Million Year Picnic.
And then, after all the rest had gone, one last rocket landed on Mars. A small, family-sized rocket come all the way from Earth. It seemed a long way to go for a picnic, but Dad had suggested a fishing trip, and Mother thought the whole family would enjoy a vacation. So here they were, floating down a Martian canal, with Timothy sitting in the back of the boat with Dad and Mother up front holding Alice the baby, and the deserted Martian towns drifting slowly by.
Dad?
What is it, Timmy?
When do we see the Martians? You promised we would.
Soon, Tim, soon.
Oh, but William, the last Martians died out years ago. They're a dead race now.
Not quite. Don't worry, son. I'll show you some real live Martians later on.
Gee, this is swell. I wish we didn't ever have to go home. How long can we stay?
1 million years.
1 million years?
Yes. It's time we told you, son. We're not going home. This is where we'll live from now on.
But what about the rocket? What about Ohio?
There's nothing there now but ruins. The last Earth radio just went off the air. That means the war is over and Earth is finished. We're going to blow up our rocket and start all over. See if we can't build a better world up here.
You mean Mars is going to be our home?
Yes. I hope you don't mind too much.
No, sir. But what about the Martians? When do we get to see them?
There they are, son. Look down at the water.
I don't see anything there.
Beside the boat. Look at the reflections in the water.
But that's us down there. Just you and me and Mom and the baby.
Yes, son. You see, we're the Martians now.
For a long, silent moment, Timmy stared down at the reflections of the family in the waters. And the Martians stared back up at him.
This was Ray Bradbury's Martian Chronicles, featuring the X-1 episodes Mars is Heaven and The Moon Be Still as Bright, There Will Come Soft Rains, and Dwellers in Silence. Also featuring the Escape episode The Earthmen and the Dimension X episode The Martian Chronicles. Compiled with commentary by Ben Avery. So there you have it.
The Martian Chronicles by Ray Bradbury.
Wow, I've been so enlightened.
Well, I am curious to find out about what you think when you read the book, Dr. Jace.
Okay.
So
now that I've listened to the radio program, I don't need to read it.
No, that's not true. That's
really?
No. Because it's not the whole thing.
Oh.
There's tons of stories that were left out of this. So.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Anyway, this was our next episode is episode 99. I'm very excited about episode 99 because it's going to be a presentation of Steve and my first podcast, the comic book crossover. And so I'm excited about that and excited to bring it out of the vault. You know, it's like that lost Doctor Who episodes that they found over in Africa. Only this is they found Steve and my podcast on my hard drive. Not as exciting, but
I was gonna say it's kind of like that, but kind of not.
Kind of like that, except lose all the anticipation and all the excitement and all the mystery of finding something in a closet in Africa. Yeah. So basically, no excitement at all.
I'm actually excited about our 100th episode that's coming up real quick.
Man. Yes, we have all of our listener feedback lists. So yeah, if you have not sent your list in yet, I'm sorry, it's too late for that. And we have our list of 100 characters that I'm going to have to start now merging those lists together so I can send it out to you guys. We can figure out how this is going to be scored.
So let me ask you this, Ben and Steve. Of the other two of us, who do you think your list will be more similar or dissimilar from? Do you think your list will be, Ben, do you think your list will be closer to mine or closer to Steve's or closer to the fans? Like, where do you guys, if you were to get a guess right now, my guess is that my list would be closer to Ben's and probably diametrically opposed to Steve. I'd imagine that's my guess. How about you guys? Do you have any guesses?
I think the logic behind making our list, and I'm not saying anyone here, their logic is bad in making it, but I think it is just different enough that it will surprise the other two.
Yes.
Regardless of whose list it is, it will be a surprise because you'll be saying, oh, you went there? Okay.
I think there'll be plenty of surprises on the list.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be different all around.
The other thing, though, is I think, honestly, I am probably the centrist here. I think that my list will be closer to yours, Dr. Jace, than Steve's is. But I also think my list will be closer to Steve's. I think that I'm going to be kind of in the middle of you two. Because I think my list will include some older comic book characters that Steve's probably might have. But then what I know about your tastes in television, Dr. Jace, I think I'll be kind of a centrist here.
Which is interesting because in other things, you guys are more on the opposite sides. But maybe in this case, we'll find out, I guess.
We will. So we're excited about that. And I just want to say thank you for listening. We're almost at 100 episodes. That's you've stuck with us for that long. If you've stuck with us for that long, wow, thank you.
Yeah.
So
if you stuck with us that long, you need to get a life. We need to get you involved in some other things.
No.
Yeah, if you've actually listened to every single episode, I think you should become an honorary member of the show.
Well, when I say, hey, all you strangers and aliens, I'm not just talking about the two of you. I'm talking about all you strangers and aliens. So.
I know. My wife's been with us all the time, so she's a fan.
Yeah. So with that said, everyone, thanks for listening, and Godspeed. Thanks for listening to Strangers and Aliens. We would like to hear from you. You can go to our website, strangersandaliens.com. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/strangersandaliens. You can email us, podcast@strangersandaliens.com, or you can send us a voicemail at 1-804-37-ALIEN. However you do it, we want to hear from you, and thanks for listening.
By transcription. It's National Wheaties Week. Ha ha ha! Yes, it's National Wheaties Week, and Wheaties present Dimension X.
On stage tonight, Dimension X, another in the Wheaties big parade of exciting half-hour presentations.
It's National Wheaties Week, the week to buy Wheaties and eat Wheaties and enjoy them as never before. The time to really find out what difference a good breakfast with Wheaties can make. You know, you're getting protein when you dip into a bowl full of Wheaties. You're getting whole wheat minerals and vitamins. You're getting whole wheat energy. Yup, there's a whole kernel of wheat in every Wheaties flake. That's how a better breakfast, beginning with Wheaties, can help you step lively all morning long. And that's why all over this big country, folks are celebrating National Wheaties Week and stepping lively. So how about it? Get out the big cereal bowl and help celebrate Breakfast of Champions. Pour out those golden flakes, put on the milk, put on the fruit, and let's have National Wheaties Week. You ready? Let's go.